I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
I like to party goddamn hard, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Arsenal won a penalty shootout. The England squad looms. It's Wednesday, 13th of March. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Jim Campbell.
I'm Pete Donaldson.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Everybody, what drama! What drama we had last night in the old football. Before we get to Arsenal, we must say thanks to friend of the Ramble, Mike, for giving us that intro line. You can submit the intro line for next Wednesday's show by signing up to our Patreon for just $5 a month. You'll also get ad-free versions of the Ramble, OTC and Upfront, as well as an extended version of every Wednesday's Ramble. Head to patreon.com/footballramble to get involved.
That was a propaganda song. Marcus, ooh. And which also details the words "Mummy's little skinheads, death threats and sycophants, and Wiener's drunk on straight edge." It just sums us all up, isn't it, in this studio, really, doesn't it?
Real life, mate.
Real life, real London.
My goodness, though, it's Wednesday today. We've all calmed down a little bit, and we can digest it, we can process it, and if you're Jim Campbell, you can celebrate it.
Absolutely. Eventually.
We were all glued to the television due to that pulsating 1-0 victory for Arsenal against FC Porto last night, which went to penalties, Pete Donaldson.
Yeah.
Were you excited when it went to penalties, or do you get... I still, even if it's not one of my teams...
Do you feel a bit sick to your
stomach? Because I have teams everywhere.
Stomach.
I'm the Manchester City of the football-supporting world. There's still a bit of nervousness, and then... You mentioned the Euros the other day, and I just thought, well, this is going to happen in the summer, isn't it?
Well, it's nice seeing, obviously, Saka slammed on home, and he has been slamming them home, and I was like, yes, good.
On that, TNT sports commentator Darren Fletcher, but Saka steps up and goes, "Saka always scores." I was a bit like, I mean, there was one occasion.
That was a wild thing to say, wasn't it?
Yeah. In fact, there was even two occasions against Liverpool, I believe.
Yeah,
not a sense of he has put it behind him and we are all going to collectively believe he has put it behind him.
Well, we do now, Andy.
He steps up. He steps up, which is maybe what 53-year-old Fletch meant.
Yeah. good to know his age. So, Jim, you were our man on the ground, or in the stands, should I say?
I've been told in no uncertain terms that I cannot go onto the pitch, but I was in the ground.
Yeah, by Gunnosaurus. That's the only reason why he's there, to keep Jim off the pitch.
And he's surprised at how quick he is.
And why he's got that cannon.
Yeah.
How was it in the stadium as it unfolded that Arsenal were going to go through?
Well, I think the crowd heeded Mikel Arteta's pleas for volume and for sort of very, very vocal support. The atmosphere was really, really good.
A lot of that.
Obviously, over that length of game, though, the crowd tire as well. So there were points where the energy levels were like,
Send them all to Dubai.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but
do you need substitutions? Is there people outside the stadium?
Maybe. AFTV, you're up. You can come back in.
Not countenance, though.
Yeah. No, but it was a very emotionally draining night because it was such a sort of difficult task with the way Porto set up to play the game. And obviously, they was going to do that. The first leg was an indication of that, and I think this is vital and invaluable experience for a group of players that don't have a lot of Champions League experience, for a manager that doesn't have a lot of Champions League experience. This is what it can be like sometimes, right? It's not always the glamorous kind of free-flowing football of the latter stages. There are points where very good teams compared to the level that you're used to playing, will come and set up and spoil and make life very, very difficult for you. And it was a difficult game that became a battle. And I was very impressed by how Arsenal played the game in front of them rather than the game they wanted to play. Mm-hmm. Because that was some of the stuff that used to happen under Wenger sometimes. It's like, if we can't play our way, then, you know, we've not really got an answer to that and we'll just get annoyed about it and take our ball home. And there was that wasn't what happened.
Yeah. I mean, Andy, with Arsenal's budget and all, should they really be celebrating beating Porto in the Champions League? It's quite pathetic, really, if you think about it. They've got a 41-year-old at the back, Porto do.
Who played bloody well.
Played the whole game as well.
I'm not joking. He's 41.
And you're whinging about crowd fatigue.
Oh, Pepe. It's extraordinary. Because normally when you sort of, a player gets to say 36, 37, you think, oh, that's impressive. You get beyond that, you get into sort of Thiago Silva territory. You're like, 30. But you know, he's 30. 41.
But you see him regularly, and he's still good regularly.
Andy, I am going to say...
He's one of the better centre-backs in the world.
This is a Stanley Matthews-esque.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. The man was a few kicks away from being in the quarterfinal of the Champions League.
You know, it's not like he's one of those players who just adjusts his positioning and doesn't run anymore. He was pretty all action.
Oh,
and
man.
He was playing next to Otavio, who's a very inexperienced defender, sort of coaching him as well.
Yeah.
So he had like jobs within his jobs.
Did he lie about his age to make him older?
to make it sound more impressive.
Yeah.
Well, I always used to say that, though, when there were certain players who were, you know, it was found that they were kind of 8 years younger or whatever.
Right,
I was like, come clean. You were playing in Serie A when you were 45.
I mean, Jim was talking about Porto's tactics, which I thought was definitely more the case in the first leg, actually, when they were at home. But one of the French reports on that first leg saying Pepe's outstanding of 41, or nearly 41 as he was coming up to the first leg. But
he's only recently 41.
Yeah, he could be 47 and play in that team because they play so deep, which I thought was quite interesting. But I think if you're looking at the medium to long term for Arsenal, which I'm not sure is really the vibe here, because you know they got through to the Champions League quarterfinals and celebrated.
You should
celebrate it. But I think if we're talking about, and Jim was talking about stuff that Arteta could learn from that, I think it's a good example of how football discussion, particularly online, sort of polarizes into black and white, because so many people were saying over Christmas, Arsenal have to buy a centre forward, based on the fact that they were missing chances over that little period. Mm-hmm. Now, I think if you look at the goal output of the team and the way they wanted to play, it was clear that it was going to come right at some point. Like, the process, for want of a better word, was pretty good. But that was a game last night where you thought, Yeah, they could do with like a proper, in inverted commas, centre forward. Well, because I think of Pepe, actually. The thing that made me think of it was Pepe. The only time I've seen him like all over the shop this season, when they played Sporting back in December, they got beaten quite comprehensively. And Victor Gyökeres, who's been brilliant this season, who was, of course, playing for Coventry last season, absolutely took him
what
to
type
the cleaners.
Of, what type of striker is he?
He's a big, burly, hold-up guy.
So they need to sign 28-year-old John Hartson again.
No, but he's quick as well. Okay. Gyökeres is the real deal. And I think there'll be some Premier League club that pays probably four times what Sporting played for him last summer, this summer.
Oh, interesting. Well, of course, last night Arsenal progressed into the Champions League quarterfinals, which obviously meant the scenes of celebration were huge. I mean, it's a bit churlish to say, well, Porto aside, they should be beating. But as you quite rightly said earlier there, Jim.
Europe's different though, isn't it?
Europe is different.
Europe's way different.
It's just a bit different game, isn't it, really?
Yeah, I thought Mr. Wendell did a good job on Saka. On the
twice.
Side. Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, as you said, Porto equipped themselves very, very well indeed.
But they didn't just come and defend.
No,
they made
didn't.
Chances. Like
they were on the break, they were a threat.
Even before it got to the penalty shootout, I thought David Raya was excellent. I mean, the way it was built up, and I can understand because, you know, you want a commentary crescendo and all the rest of it. It was like, this is the moment in this penalty shootout where David Raya can prove that Arteta's made the right decision. Well, he's proved that already, hasn't he, really? And I think the fact that it was a game where he knew he'd be standing about for a long time, he stood up and made some really important saves at the moments where he needed to.
Big save from Evan Nilsson in there as well. It was an interesting performance from an Arsenal point of view in a lot of ways as well, because I think Saka and Trossard, despite his goal, were actually kind of quite off it last night. There was a sense that maybe the passing, both long and short, was off throughout the team a little bit. A lot of stray balls going out of touch.
I thought Odegaard did all right, though.
Oh, Odegaard was fantastic. Yeah. I think Odegaard was my man of the match. I mean, not just because of his assist, his work rate, and just the constant invention. He dances around the ball.
Well, he dances around a very small space. Like, he could play in a phone box. He just makes the most of whatever he's got and gets the ball away. Sorry, phone box is a very old reference. Train station, Pret-a-Manger.
There you go.
For the kids.
I don't think train station Pret-a-Manger is for the kids, are they?
No, I'm just saying the reference was. I was up.
Fair. No, well played, sir.
A hot meatball wrap.
There you are.
The kids are into.
I love a hot meatball wrap from Pret, incidentally. I just think it's. I mean, look, I've said this a little while ago, and I'll say it again, Damon. It's just so good to see Martin Odegaard being such a crucial player for Arsenal in this period in Arsenal's recent modern history.
Can you think of anything comparable where you have someone who's a wonder kid who goes to a massive club too early, who doesn't make it, who then goes on to have a brilliant career at another club, at another big club?
Yeah.
It's unlikely, isn't it?
It is. I know
really,
what you mean.
I mean,
that's exactly what I was going to sort of talk about. It's incredible to think of him at Real Madrid a few years ago, and then obviously going to Heerenveen and Real Sociedad, where he kind of got himself back on track.
There were definitely times pre-Jude Bellingham where you've looked at Real Madrid and thought, oh, I could really do with a Martin Odegaard.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. He's a glorious footballer, there's no doubt about
that.
Yeah,
he's an absolute joy to watch.
Yeah, and I mean, that assist for Trossard, I just want to make sure that gets the attention. And the finish as well from Trossard.
Yeah, it was a good finish, but there's so much to the assist. Yeah. There's so many different individual moments within it before he picks that pass so perfectly. And that's essentially, you know, the difference maker, isn't it?
It is.
We're talking about, you know, needing that X factor, but it's come from a playmaker rather than from a striker.
Yeah, and if that doesn't go in, then, you know, I mean, I know you're open up to chaos theory, but that's the only goal they score, for crying out loud. In the penalty shootout, though, again, this is the sort of Arteta factor, if you like. They just weren't losing that shootout for me. And I know home advantage can be a funny thing with penalty shootouts.
But winning the toss was important as well, because it was down the away from the Porto fans.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we know the statistics with penalties, that isn't it sort of 55 or 60% of those who take the first kick go on to win the shootout, which if you're second to take, you know, that may weigh on your mind. I don't know. But there's all these little things if you look into the psychology of penalty shootouts and so on and so forth. And like celebrating the penalties that you score, a side that does that more, again, statistically, win more penalty shootouts.
That's interesting.
Yeah, I know. It's fascinating when these little things, now people say, oh, but that's just coincidence. Yeah, but again, if you can only study what's put in front of you.
I think
what
does Keady know about this?
Argentina certainly know about this.
Well, didn't Thierry Henry basically walk away from the last penalty because he knew it wasn't going to go in because he just saw the body language of the player? I do that.
Was that in a penalty shootout, or was that in normal time though?
No, I think it was now, wasn't it? I think it was. The penalty shootout. Yeah,
I thought you meant he was a player.
He took the last penalty shootout.
Martin Keown taking this one. I'm not interested.
and he just walked away. He was heading to catering or something because he knew that he'd missed the chance.
The man also hates to queue, doesn't he? and he shouldn't have to queue.
He should not have to queue
at the Emirates.
No,
I don't know.
No, that's true.
If there is a queue, he just sort of runs on the outside and cuts in.
I do. I would like to sort of do like a blind test where someone just showed me 10 penalties and I could just say whether they were missed or just from their body language, not having any context. I would very much like someone to
test me
on that because I'm confident I'd get them right.
True. It'd be a good thing to learn to fake, wouldn't it?
Yes.
If
you can approach looking like you don't have confidence, exactly what you're going to do.
Chris Akron is fake hamstring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then you say that, but who? I mean, the chap who scored the winning goal for Porto in the first tie,
Galeno.
You know,
he missed the crucial
on the
kick.
Same day that he got called up for Brazil to replace Martinelli. Isn't that an interesting
twist?
But
when he looked a little bit nervous, but yet his kick was in the corner.
Yeah,
you know, like he's very unlucky. I mean, even the one that Raya saved, Raya leapt superbly to the corner.
They were not just penalty shootout saves; they were good penalty saves.
Yeah, Raya. See, the thing is with Raya in that the save when it ended the shootout, it looked like it was a nice height and it was, you know, a nice one for the keeper. It wasn't. It was actually in the corner. The way with massive hands, and he leapt so quickly and so decisively into the corner that he wasn't actually at full stretch.
Mm.
Where, you know, it was a superb bit of goalkeeping.
But I think you're right about the atmosphere and the environment and all that sort of stuff. Because the two Porto players who didn't score are not just random, they're like bona fide penalty takers as well. If you look at the numbers, Diogo Costa saves a lot more penalties proportionally than David Raya. Mm. So I think you're right about it being the moment.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I think I can speak on behalf of Jim, but there were a lot of Arsenal fans and Mikel Arteta saying, I came here for a shootout. And they got it. They absolutely got it.
I think that was more Porto's plan.
Yeah,
but
true.
It doesn't sound as good in a Portuguese accent.
Pepe very much went there for a shootout.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glorious win, though, for Arsenal when all's said and done. And I think the penalty shootout wins. Oddly, it can galvanise you and it can give you more of a spring in your step than, say, a 3-0 win and the job's good.
Absolutely. And I think, as I touched on before, it's vital experience of what European knockout football is like. That has been, you know, something that's been a little bit lacking from Arteta so far. Went out to Sporting at the same stage in the Europa League on penalties at home last season. Mm. So, an improvement on that. And also the way the game was refereed was incredibly different. Mm. Now, obviously, it's Clement Turpin, one of Europe's biggest bell ends, in charge of the game. So you kind of never know what you're going to get from him.
Hang on, do you like him or not? He does a fine job and then you're slagging him off.
But it's very, very different, isn't it? I mean, obviously there was a lot of time wasting happening in the first half and there was a minute of added time. And it is one of those things where you can get annoyed about it and you can, you know, you can piss and moan and insult the opposition dugout's family, allegedly. or you can just accept that this is probably going to be the case and you just have to play within that.
Yeah.
So it's a vital reminder that sometimes the rules themselves will feel different.
And one of the ways in which Turpin really let everyone down, I thought, bear in mind that Sergio Conceição is a man who, in under 7 years of being Porto coach, has been sent off 24 times.
I was going to say, he's an angry man.
Yeah.
And he got himself a booking. And you're waiting for it. You're waiting for the second booking that never comes.
Kai Havertz clattered him as well in a highlight of the game, which was surprising. So for those who missed it, he said after the game that Arteta had insulted his family, one of whom was no longer with us. Obviously, his son was in the team as well, so I don't know if he's including that. But he's also said similar things about Pep Guardiola and about Thomas Tuchel after games as well. And I think it's part of his sort of like...
All right.
He's
doing the Michael
surprised.
Jordan. What are you saying about my family? I didn't say anything about your family.
Yeah, Yeah. I think there's still some Mourinho on that team, is what
you'll never get it out.
Was Arteta connecting his brain to his testicles when he said that?
Maybe.
Like kind of.
But is
like a telephone exchange.
to get rid of the Mourinho feel, is that why André Villas-Boas might be Porto president soon?
Keep it in the family.
Mm. Okay. He was at the game, wasn't he?
He was there yesterday, yeah.
But he's in the running for president.
Yeah, he is. The election is at the end of April.
Do you get a vote, Andy? I'd imagine you do.
Several.
That's how it works in Portugal, baby.
Oh, it's amazing that he is like the new blood, taking on a man who has been in charge of Porto for almost as long as he has been alive.
Ooh.
Coming up 42 years, Pinto da Costa has been the president of Porto. He's 86.
Wow. Blimey. It's American politics-esque.
Isn't it?
So Arsenal enters the quarterfinal, of course. They're in with Paris Saint-Germain, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, Manchester City, and Barcelona. I quite like this. On the UEFA website, it's Champions League quarterfinals, meet the teams. As if we don't know any of them. Of course, tonight there will be two more teams joining Arsenal, but Barcelona are definitely one of them into the quarterfinals. They beat Napoli 4-2 on AG, 3-1 on the night. First time in four seasons that Barcelona are in the quarterfinals of the Champions League. What a romantic story, Andy.
Well, they celebrated it really joyously at the end. I don't know if it was because loads of them went to Pau Kubasi, the 17-year-old centre-back, because, of course, this is the first time in a Champions League knockout tie that two teenagers had started the game.
Yeah.
Kubasi and Lamine Yamal. And I think they were arguably their two best players. They were absolutely brilliant. So it was kind of that sort of youthful joie de vivre. And it was also that sense of, we've just got the million-pound question on who wants to be a millionaire. Because, of course, they make another 11 million euros for getting in the quarterfinals, and they get a little bit closer to maybe making what a lot of fans and perhaps players don't want, the Club World Cup in 2025. They get 50 million for being in that. And is all massive for Barcelona.
And let's be honest, they have spent that money.
Yeah, I was going to say, basically,
straight out.
Someone has said, you've
poop
made
off a shovel.
you're right. I think immediately after the finals, someone, it's a few more million in the bank. Great, let's go and chat to Victor Osimhen. We'll give you 80 million. No, you can't. That's just, get your abacus out.
Realistically, it's Kubasi going, Dad says we don't have to take the 4D telly back. Hooray!
I cannot get enough of Sergio Roberto's past Lewandowski.
Yeah, mate, I totally agree.
It was so unnecessary because he could have put his foot through it.
Yeah.
And he was barely looking and he just gives it a little slider and
lovely move.
It was one of my favourite passes of the season, even though it was like 6 feet away.
Yeah. It was... Oh, do you know what?
It was like, this is the perfect place to put it. To fire the laser into the mirror. to get it past the keeper.
It was glorious. It was such a lovely goal to sort of end the time.
It felt a bit old Barcelona.
It did.
Mm. And so much of the game wasn't old Barcelona. Napoli had load of the ball. Barcelona relied on their current strength, which is largely playing on the counter-attack. And they were very, very good on it, by the way, from the moment that Fermin opened the scoring. But it's funny, you look at those young players and you think, some people have whispered for years very quietly, instead of spending all that money on Coutinho and Griezmann and Dembélé and all the rest of it, why didn't you just lean on the youth academy like you always did? Well, and it's just an underlining of the fact that they should have done.
The fact that they have it is such an asset, isn't it? And if anything's going to see them through this really turbulent period, it is that. And we're seeing again.
Not sexy, though, is it? It's not going to get you on your telly channels, is it?
But
it is sexy, though, isn't it? It's their brand.
Absolutely.
It's their brand.
Yeah,
what's not sexy is Barcelona spending a lot of money on players.
No, it's not sexy and mature, is what Pete wanted to say.
Nice to see Rafinha, though, isn't it, playing for Barcelona? Although I do think, like, playing for this Barcelona, it's like being given your own sitcom, but it is on ITV2.
The writing's on the wall, isn't it?
It's good. I am happy about it. It's just like,
I do know what you mean. It's... That's very true. Did you know
Jim's got a comedy special out? It's on YouTube. Oh, it's a self-published.
Cost me 10 grand.
So, Barcelona, they're in the quarterfinal. Now, from next season, the Champions League draw will be a little tricky. There was talk that they might do this televised, as they often do with the Champions League draw.
Rod Stewart.
Get Rod the... Well, Rod Peter, I would be worried the state of Rod Stewart had they have gone through with the lads.
Yeah.
Because the new 36 team league format would have required 900 different balls and would have taken apparently 4 hours. Perfect. To do.
So only 10 minutes longer than the current one then.
Yeah. Plenty of time for a sleep in the middle. Brilliant.
But they've trialled it, didn't they? So it's like some sort of like UEFA suits have gone and done this. And that sounds like an absolutely arduous afternoon.
Imagine the UEFA labs.
Imagine the buffet though. Imagine how that was catered. They'd have had a brilliant time.
They would have done, yeah.
I'm imagining like sort of a Mad Men situation where it's a two-way mirror and there's people in white courts doing the bowling. Well, it isn't very good.
They are still going to televise it though, aren't they?
Well, yeah, so they're just going to give it to the computers.
But surely that's going to take like less than a second. So what are you televising around?
Here we go. Yeah. Here's the big pomp and ceremony. Da, 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 and here's the draw. Bang! Oh, bloody hell. Okay. So there you go. And it flashes up for like 30 seconds and then they take it off. Yeah. Hang on! I only saw the first few teams there.
like the National Lottery draw in the 90s where they tried to make it a big event on Saturday night TV.
Oh.
So can this supercomputer be hacked? That's my concern.
Yeah.
Pete, we're looking at you for this.
Anything can be hacked if it's not air-gapped. If the computer isn't like if it's connected to the internet, it can be hacked. And even if it isn't, it can be hacked.
Right. Okay.
Tragic.
Is that a promise?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just
sitting there like the Chinese government.
don't give it any USB key, USB ports, and you should be all right.
Is that how you do it?
Yeah, lots of ways. You can hack a computer in certain things with
save using, it for rambling crabs.
Using no, don't you dare go
using
to a break.
Fan. Using like they've had people having a computer talk to another one and hack another computer using fan speed.
Well, they sweet talk them. Hey,
fan speed makes a certain noise and makes a certain tone.
Can you do
and
it?
So if you have like 50 different tones that the fan can do, that can be used to communicate.
Can you give us a tone?
What tone actually, is that's that? Quite a good pitch back fan noise.
So if you go next to a computer and do that, it'll just spit out, it'll just start printing out.
That went a bit. That went a bit. Bit Australian TV presenter. Yeah. Right.
Now's a good time for a break.
Is it?
I think so. Coming up in the second half, we've got some beef between the Premier League and the Football League. Some Liverpool chat with Michael Edwards returning and Gareth Southgate's England squad. See you in a moment.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/ramble.
It's just all you need is some players to play with. I know you can't say that, but I'm saying it. I just think you need more quality around you. For me, he needs to build the team around you, the quality you have. But that'll come with a few transfer windows, hopefully, once he gets the right players in.
Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. Tim Sherwood there, at a wedding, presumably.
Yeah, at a wedding, tie off, open can in hand, talking to a young member of his family who doesn't really know him that well. Unsolicited.
Who happens to oddly be Cole Palmer. right, now, the Premier League clubs and the EFL clubs have been in discussions this week.
Now, this is a one-sided discussion. Can we have some money, please?
I was about to say.
No.
The Premier League clubs will be like Simon Cowell & Co, and the EFL will be like a contestant in the early rounds of X-Factor. You want some more, do you?
Why don't you do a little dance?
So this is all about the deal, which is a six-year deal which grants the Football League 14.75%. of net media revenue with the Premier League, which is to be worth in the region of about £900 million as it goes on. And that's what had been previously mooted with regards to that deal. Premier League clubs are now prioritising an agreement on their own financial model before getting down to this. So the Premier League, yeah, they failed to agree this with the EFL. And it's been reported that 10 Premier League clubs made it clear they wouldn't vote for the deal.
Some of the teams mentioned don't spend money well, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's so definitely that. I think the money should be taken away from them because Palace sign Connor Wickhams every now and again.
That's been actually the argument from a lot of clubs as well, isn't it? That they think it's a lot of clubs' troubles are down to financial mismanagement, which I think is, you know, for want of a better phrase, a little bit rich. Also, the argument that he's... And I think, again, this is very narrow, is that, for example, why should a Nottingham Forest pay for a Leicester to try to replace them? But it, again, it's narrow, isn't it?
It's about as narrow as the sentiment could be, really, isn't it?
Their argument is. And it's just incredibly short-sighted. And we're seeing it across a lots of different culture, right? The live music scene in Britain is really, like, small venues are struggling really, really badly, and they're trying to get sort of bigger venues and big artists to sort of, you know, raise a bit of a levy from ticket sales here and there, just to sort of keep the very ecosystem in which that culture exists alive. Yeah. And I think this is a similar thing, and something needs to happen, doesn't it?
Well, I feel that we're duty bound to name the 10 clubs in case anybody hasn't seen this. Arsenal,
yes,
get in there.
Chelsea, Spurs, Liverpool, West Ham, Aston Villa, Wolves, Forest, Palace, and Bournemouth. Petey, Fulham and Newcastle, very happy with it.
No, yeah, let them.
All you've got to do, get yourself, and Man City, get yourself a billionaire.
I mean, what else is Newcastle going to spend their money on? Not allowed.
It is interesting, though, isn't it? Because you've got the looming independent football regulator. It does feel, with the state the government are in at the moment, that there must be a sense of light filibustering.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Can put us back in charge of our own.
So the government have threatened to impose a deal on the Premier League, as you say, due to this. I hope not. Yeah. Well, I mean, microwave ready, maybe. That's what we need in this country. Yeah. So some of the clubs are obviously reportedly threatening legal action should a regulator try and force them to pay. Which is quite something. Yeah, the chair of the Culture, Media and Sport Committee accused clubs of parking the bus. Yeah. Hey, yeah. I love a bit of football, me.
Yeah.
Football phrase book. I'm just like you. Yeah. No, it's a deal of two halves. No, it isn't. Are you listening to us?
It's probably not a bad play to sort of try and kick this into the long grass because there's so much shit to work out and sort out for the next iteration of the government. So, it probably will be.
But what would you like to see happen, Andy? What do you think's fair and good here? You're the
I think the Premier League
bastion of fair and good all of a sudden.
Yeah. I think the Premier League league is doing a really good job, whilst having said all along that we don't need an independent regulator, mm-hmm. to show that it does need an independent regulator. Because if you look at the profit and sustainability rules at the moment, and the fact that the clubs are struggling and kicking against rules that effectively they have brought in themselves. Mm-hmm. The Premier League at one point looked really decisive, if you go back a couple of years. It doesn't look at that at the moment.
No.
It looks like it needs help.
I think 900 million across 6 years, mm-hmm. in the whole of the Premier League just seems a little bit low and a little bit easy for them to kind of swallow a little bit.
Do you know what? Maybe. I wouldn't be surprised if certain owners just went, we'll pick it up.
We'll be the good guys.
We'll pick that up and you'll like us a bit more.
It's like picking up the menu at the end of the, but of course the meal, isn't it?
The weird thing is giving over the money is the easy bit. It's not actually saying share best practice, help these clubs look after themselves, let's repair the ecosystem. It's a typical Premier League, let's throw money at the problem. I'm not saying they shouldn't be keen to give the money. They shouldn't be keen to reinvest in the pyramid. Of course they would. But I think from the other perspective as well, there has to be a sense that the EFL clubs aren't going to completely waste it. Yeah. Are you confident the EFL clubs aren't going to completely waste it?
Burnley, give Sheffield Wednesday an old running machine right now. Some old barbells.
Yeah, how much is that worth? It's not worth that much, surely.
I thought you were suggesting that because Burnley are so sensible with their money, just give all the money to Burnley.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that maybe counted more for the previous Burnley regime, but yeah.
In their current predicament, do they even get a vote, Burnley?
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. Yeah. West Ham, give Kevin Nolan to someone.
There you go. Eh? Yeah. He's worth, $12 million?
Up top, he probably would be, yeah.
Still, I know. I mean, the discussion will always be, it's such an intriguing situation with the Premier League and the Football League, because obviously that they both sort of need each other, but they're both part of the same ecosystem. And yet, of course, the Premier League is governed, a different organisation.
There's people with words like government in there.
Yeah, well, indeed.
They're not really governed very well, are they?
True, but I mean, there'll be people from other countries just thinking, why on earth did you sell off the top league, essentially? And that will always be the case when you look back. It's easy to say these things years and years after the event, of course. But
it was in the era of the Quangor.
Is that right?
That's loosely.
Yeah, true.
The Blair thing, Quangor, wasn't it?
So it was a little bit before.
A little bit earlier, yeah.
It was before. Right, let's stay with football and finances and all that kind of stuff. Michael Edwards is returning to Liverpool. Their former sporting director returned to the club to oversee operations post Jurgen Klopp as FSG's CEO of football. Is he going to be given a war chest, Jim?
I would assume so. Or he'll be allocating a war chest, will he not?
Yeah, true.
He'll get
enough
to allocate his own war chest. Is he CEO, for crying out loud?
Yes, that's right.
I mean, he gets to appoint a sporting director and everything.
Yeah. So who gets the war chest these?
It's got to be the sporting director.
It's the sporting director, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yes, that's true.
Who makes the chest that contains the money?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you think of this? Because obviously, he had, when he was at the club, great success, of course.
Signed Salah, Van Dijk.
Yeah, and one
Mane,
it was
Klopp in.
Yeah, I mean, it was the most successful period of their history since what would you go back to the late 80s, probably.
Yeah.
So that's how good it was. So presumably, Liverpool fans will be delighted to see him
absolutely
come back.
And probably the best team Liverpool have ever had in that incredible season, and especially given that they won the Champions League in that era too. And that's not something you can say lightly, but I think it does stand up when you look at their achievements. Something we've spoken about a lot here before, but it's a real coup at a time of upheaval, isn't it?
He needed convincing as well.
Yeah,
it's a very different role, though. That's the point, isn't it? He's not day-to-day like the sporting director will be. It's overall strategy, mm-hmm. because he told journalists, actually quite recently, Michael Edwards, that he didn't want to come back to Liverpool as sporting director. And so he's not coming back to Liverpool as sporting director. They've almost created an Uber job.
What if we give you
him
a bigger
really
chair? Is essentially what they've said.
A bigger chair in a different office.
Yeah.
In a different location.
Yes.
It feels like that. It's like Abramovich and his stadium at Waterloo. He'll be hovering above the Liverpool training
little
ground,
blimp.
I think.
little CEO blimp.
Yeah.
How am I doing, CEO?
You're doing great, lad.
But Jim has pointed out that the interesting thing that hasn't been so publicised is the fact that he will be managing as FSG's CEO of football.
Yes.
He will be responsible for overall policy at Liverpool and a yet to be determined other club. So Liverpool or FSG are going multi-club as well, it looks
they
like.
They are. Is that the future?
It feels
well,
that way.
Well, it's yeah. the present, isn't it?
Well, as in, of course it is, but for very few clubs it's the present.
Do you think
it's
Zeppelin's the past?
Led ones. Definitely.
Right, okay, yeah.
I don't know. A Goodyear blimp still knocking about.
They're still kicking a ball here and there. Yeah.
Are you assuming it's just been untethered and it's roaming free?
Getting out there.
As in it's still alive. I don't know where it's floating. I have seen it in the canvas, not the flesh. I don't know. That's horrible.
Surely they have more than one Goodyear blimps.
They have a Volkswagen blimp at half time at Wolfsburg. Mm. And because it's quite a
small one.
Compact stadium,
right.
It's like, you know, you were talking about Sergio Roberto dribbling in a phone box.
Mm.
It's like doing Super Mario Kart in a phone box.
Right. Yes, yeah. You used to see them at, I'm going to bring in wrestling again. You used to see them at wrestling shows quite a lot. Mm. And it would just be advertising like Snickers and stuff. And they just look really dangerous. Now, I don't know why they haven't switched to sort of drone technology.
That's true.
Where have all the Zeppelins gone?
It's just
all the humans.
If you're like very, very young and you're growing up and you looked at sort of a Zeppelin or a blimp or whatever you want to call
it's
it.
It's quite eerie.
You would be like, it would be like suddenly seeing people riding around on penny farthings instead of like your rental bikes or something. You're like, surely these are done.
Yeah.
We've moved on, Jim. Anyway, I don't know. But yeah, so Liverpool, what are Liverpool buying? A Zeppelin, did we say? I can't
remember. Yeah, CEO of football's like, going to float around to the different clubs that they look after.
Now you're talking.
Right.
But multi-club ownership, is that the future for the super clubs, Andy Brassel?
Look, it's been so successful for Manchester City in particular that a lot of clubs have been moving in that direction for...
Does that make Bayern more likeable in Germany? If they started doing that?
The thing is, though, you're looking at that from a here perspective. In a Germany perspective, Bayern are infinitely more likeable next to, say, RB Leipzig.
Yeah, but no, not say, next to specifically RB Leipzig. There's no one else who's... You know, you've got RB Leipzig the most dislikable, then Bayern, and then it's kind of...
Well, that's debatable.
You've got El Plastico, though, haven't you? Have you said between Bayer Leverkusen and Wolfsburg?
Yeah, Leverkusen and Wolfsburg are considered, and Hoffenheim are considered not real.
All right.
By a lot of fans.
You've convinced me. I hate them all. Right, let's move on to something that's much more likeable. Gareth Southgate's England. The squad will be announced tomorrow. Now, of course, tournament squads have been reduced from 26 to 23 players.
Is this too early? This feels too early. I'm not done with the Premier League. Can we just move back a little bit? Calm it down.
I thought you'd be happy with this. I know there's the battle for eighth place, Peter.
What he's saying is he's in the FA Cup this weekend. That's what he's saying.
For about 20 minutes, yeah.
Yeah, well, Andy, you said on Monday night's Reacts that Cole Palmer won't make the squad.
I would be surprised.
Now, bearing in mind...
Said it in a gilet as well.
Yeah, you were very Tim Sherwood about your look, but certainly not what you were saying, because obviously Tim Sherwood thinks Chelsea should be moulded around Cole Palmer because all of his teammates are utter shite, was basically what he was saying in that break ID.
I don't know why everyone had such a problem with it. I enjoyed it.
I did as well.
It's exactly what a pundit should be. Confusing.
Sounds drunk.
Sounds drunk. Shit, like it starts the sentence in the middle of the sentence. I just like it. I just liked everything about it.
Yes. So will Cole Palmer, should Gareth Southgate mould the whole squad around Andy Cole and Carlton Palmer, Jim Campbell?
Got all talk sport. I would really like to see him in the squad. Just he has been so, so effective. And I suppose England don't play in a way that, suggests an obvious position for Palmer. But I wonder if he might even be an option at striker, as he's played that way for Chelsea and has been really successful when he's done that. So
I think he's on one of the flanks,
well,
surely.
I don't know.
That's where he would go.
See, though, this discussion is completely opposite to what will be in Gareth Southgate's mind. And you touched on it at the beginning. With the squad only being 23, Palmer, to me, feels really nice to have rather than essential. And I think especially with a few of the defensive issues, I think maybe you need to be looking at a few I'd like, if I was going, well,
we will come on to the defence because, yes, there are big questions.
I think you need to be looking at a few utility players. I don't think he would be lovely to have. I would love to see him in there, as I said to Pete on Monday night. I just don't see the particular justification for it, given the competition in that end of the pitch.
I think that's a very, very concise and mature way of looking at it, Andy. So I think you're absolutely right. He's been involved in a lot of goals this season, in 19 to be precise, which is level with Jude Bellingham. And you know, yeah, when all said and done, he's not going to start, and he may be an impact sub, that kind of thing. But the midfield and the defence are where, or one specific place in the midfield and in defence is where the question marks are. Declan Rice will be in that midfield and he'll play at the base of the midfield. Now, I know for Arsenal, he kind of pushes up a bit more because Jorginho's there. He's given a little bit more freedom. At England, he won't be given that, but I think we're all okay with that. It's who will partner him at the base of midfield, if indeed they do have the two there and Bellingham in front, or who occupies the other spot if it's more of a pivot and you have Bellingham and someone else like it was in the World Cup.
Marcus, if between now and the Euros,
yes,
Jordan Henderson dies,
right,
Gareth Southgate will get a taxidermist to fit wheels in his feet,
right,
and it will be either Declan Rice or Jude Bellingham's job in the tournament to wheel him around
yeah,
while they also do their own job.
Yeah. Can Jude Bellingham do that celebration where he puts his head against Jordan Henderson, or would that be seen as
a health risk, I think.
Okay.
Like Manchester United.
I imagine he'd have been lacquered.
Yes, will someone lacquer Jordan Henderson
sorry young people for the reference, could it be a Weekend at Bernie's kind of situation with Jordan Henderson if he died?
If Bernie gave
Rice
up on all
Jude
of his
Bellingham have got him on a string.
Summer at Hendo's.
Summer at Hendo's. There's the title. I smell a title. But it's, I mean,
and a rotten corpse.
I mean, Henderson's playing where he's playing and playing all right. He had a good match in the week or whatever. But like, and Phillips is spent, so everyone else is injured.
Jonjo Shelvey.
It's got to be Stones.
Now you're talking.
It's so frustrating that Curtis Jones is injured, isn't it? Because he's the midfielder who requires the most urgent attention as a potential England player. Because I think that is potentially really well balanced midfield. Mm.
Give it Stonesy. Give it Stonesy.
Oh, so who's partnering Harry Maguire then? You see.
Give it Stonesy.
You move one out, then there's a big gap there, and more questions are asked.
It's like saying, "Oh, you're taking out of the team." I'm not taking out of the team. He's in the team. He's just moved up a bit.
Yeah. Well. Can he, you know, when he goes, does he also stay?
I don't understand.
So there is that question mark about who will play there. Trent Alexander-Arnold is injured, but people have said he could play there. You've mentioned Henderson. Well, he's playing in a proper league now. So Henderson will be in the squad because, now, friend of the Ramble, your personal friend and mine, Lawrence McKenna, was once up at, fairly recently up at St. George's Park. Where I've been myself watching England train, and he said the only person he could hear was Henderson.
Right.
When they were training. And people might think, oh, he's a loud bugger. This is the point. Right. He's there for so much more than he, even if he doesn't play, for driving people. He's almost like the unofficial captain.
And I think if we're talking about right now,
yeah,
he is doing very, very well out of Calvin Phillips this season.
Oh, absolutely. But I think, look, Henderson has the experience, he has the leadership, blah, blah, blah. I don't think he should start.
Man and ball.
And if we need
love
people,
means love. Come on. Come on.
Naughty. If we need someone to hurry up goalkeepers, we know he can run at them full pelt.
It's the Ajax way, Marcus. It's the Ajax way.
I disagreed with your comments, Andy, by the way, when you said that about Henderson, because they do love to press there. And if that's not pressing, I don't know what is.
Depressing.
All right.
You are a naughty bastard, and you know you are.
Look, he will be in the squad, as I say, even for personal, to bring that kind of personality and so on and so forth. But I don't want to spend too much time talking about
him. He's an inflatable unicorn for the... new X generation.
If he needs to wear a unicorn outfit and Saka to ride him in a swimming pool, then fine. Get him in.
All right. Yeah, I'm on board now.
Now, I thought so. Harry Maguire might be a bit too much, but yeah. Saka perhaps.
Overinflate the unicorn. So, it's a blimp.
There we are. Back to blimps. Phillips, we really want him to suddenly just take off and have a wonderful last few months.
He's now not getting in the West Ham team.
He was absolute dog shit at the weekend.
I know.
Like, he had two passes. His opening two passes were like, oh my God.
Yeah, and which is such a shame because we know him and Rice can play well in midfield for England. That's the big frustration. And if we're frustrated about it, imagine his levels of frustration.
Well, this could be his coup de grace, Gareth Southgate. This could be his kind of like, look, you thought I would sort of stick with Maguire through thick and thin.
Yeah.
Well, check me out.
Well, I think he will stick with Phillips because...
You reckon?
Because... Ooh. Well, this is what I think. Because he's, in a sense, he's worried about Phillips in an England shirt, if you see what I mean. And thus far, Phillips has always done okay for him.
So it's that he's fit enough to play. It's not whether he's playing well.
Well, so there is...
Is that what you're getting at?
It's never really
basically
been a meritocracy.
I think so. But anyway, people will disagree with that. That's just what I'm thinking. It wouldn't worry me too much. The other options in midfield... Now, see, again, these other options... So Ross Barkley's been mentioned, and Ross Barkley was even asked about this. I don't think it would be unreasonable. I think it would be a surprise.
But if we look at him or Ruben Loftus-Cheek,
yeah,
there are reasons. But if we're talking about it in a Southgate context, mm-hmm. it's way left field.
It is a bit left field, admittedly.
And that's not him.
No, I don't think so. I mean, if you wanted to say bring in somebody like Eber Echieza, you have to restructure the midfield, and some people are calling for that midfield to be restructured. It puts a lot of pressure on Declan Rice. So you would have Rice in there, you'd have Bellingham on sort of, say, one sort of flanking in one side, if you like, and then you could have people want, I don't know, maybe Madison or Foden in there and so on. I think that's very unlikely.
The thing is, I think Bellingham playing as that attacking midfielder for Madrid is like one of the best players in the world.
I think you don't ignore that, and you do as
Southgate has been doing, and you play him in that position.
Yeah.
A lot of good attacking talent, but you can't play them all.
Well, exactly. And I think that's where we get a little bit lost here. If you look at previous sides that have won tournaments, you know, again, pragmatism seems to be the order of the day.
Absolutely. I think there's a massive difference between what would entertain me and picking our most exciting players and pick a team that is actually going to win the tournament.
Yeah, and that's all that's missing for England at the moment. I mean, people have been, you know, saying that Southgate's a bit boring and whatnot. I've not been bored at all. England have scored so many goals at tournaments under Southgate. Mm. Like, you compare that to previous England sides at tournaments, it's been hardly any goals, you know.
No one should be sitting there saying, I miss the glorious failure.
Yeah.
Should they?
Oh, no, Andy, we were begging
None
for glorious failure.
Ever said that.
we were begging for glorious failure when it just became failure.
Remember England-Algeria?
Yeah.
Scientists study that game because somehow nothing happened.
Kobbie Mainoo.
Get out, Marcus.
Really? Because
Southgate's just not going to pick him.
He hadn't started a league game when England last played.
Exactly.
He's forced the question, hasn't he, Kobbie Mainoo?
Yeah.
If there was going to be something left fieldy that Southgate
realistically lefty fieldy,
that is more the Southgate.
It would be this, and he'd never play, and he's just there to.
I don't know.
Southgate
has picked younger players before.
Yeah.
Not in a sort of a Sven Walcott kind of situation, but I don't think it is ridiculous because Declan Rice, it's not his God-given right not to get injured. Now, I know that sense. See what I mean? You have to have a bit of a plan. If Rice got injured, I mean,
Jim spent 2.5 hours shitting himself last night. what are you doing to him?
if he does get injured, just put him in a bowl of rice. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Sorry, right. Everyone.
Also, Apple have advised against that now.
Exactly. Yeah, said done with that.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was enjoying
ruining some rice with water, toilet water.
But anyway, we've talked about the midfield there. Let's move on to the defence. Now, Alexander-Arnold, who probably would be more of a midfielder for England, but he's out. Trippier's out, not a long-term one. But who will play left back is a question, because Trippier has played there before. But as I say, he's out injured for the moment. But again, not a big injury, but long-term injury. I mean, Ben Chilwell can't seem to stay fit. When he's back, he's out injured not that long after. Luke Shaw is going to be...
Neither of those are likely to have a lot of match fitness.
No, I mean,
the tournament.
I mean, at the moment, it's suggested that Shaw will be back sometime in May.
And I think that's one of the worst things you can do.
Yeah,
like take a player who's only just got back to a tournament.
Has that ever worked? It probably has worked, but I mean, it's very, very scant examples, one would suggest.
Yeah, indeed, yeah. So you know, the two players that have been so often talked about at left back for England are injured. Levy Cole is a doubt too. Now, Levy Cole, where's his best position, would it be? Yeah. But we know he can operate at left back, but he's a bit of a doubt at the moment. Don't know whether he'll be picked or not on the basis of that. Rico Lewis played there not that long ago, but again, he's been out. He's not played that much. You suddenly start to think, ooh, this is getting a little bit thin on the ground. Also at centre-half, Mark Gay, who's been an ever-present in the Southgate squad, not so much of a starter, but still, he's had a long-term injury as well. So suddenly in the defence, you start to think,
Smaldini. Smaldini.
That would be left field, Andy.
Oh, but it'd be wonderful.
You're referring to Chris Smalling, aren't
you? Yes, and an endorsement of going vegan as well.
Yeah. Mm. Work for Jermaine Defoe?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, mate. Ooh, maybe.
I think the sensible option, which obviously Southgate leans heavily towards as often as possible, with the players who are available, is Joe Gomez. Because he's played there for Liverpool, he's acquitted himself well. Andy Robertson's not getting back in the team.
And Raheem Sterling doesn't seem to be in the England squad anymore. Well. So they can't have that punch up again in the canteen.
Yeah, well, exactly.
I mean, I wonder if Joe Gomez fell foul of that, because we know Southgate is very, very keen on squad harmony. In fact, not just harmony, like the good times and the good vibes. And I think anybody who he feels doesn't really fit the squad or could even maybe slightly take something away, you know, because Gomez and Sterling did have that bust up, didn't they?
Yeah.
And Sterling was such a crucial player under Southgate for a time. I wonder if that still plays in Southgate's mind. You know, I mean, take like Ben White. Now, there's been a number of theories about why Ben White was not picked or bombed out of the squad or this, that, and the other.
The most prominent one is that he didn't do his homework, basically, when given it by Steve Holland. But you know, as I've said before, like I think it's worth mending that fence for Southgate, because he's a very versatile player, very, very good player, and he would bring a lot to the squad.
Yeah.
He's probably got a holiday booked, so it's got all boot anyway. But.
Yeah, so Joe Gomez and Ben White would certainly be two who, all being well, would be in the squad. You would think
on form, there's no argument with either of them, is there? And I think that versatility that Jim was talking about. I mean, Gomez, you're getting three positions out of him.
Mm. Yeah.
Everyone needs to just grow up and get a Tino Livramento in there.
There it is.
Hey.
Well, Pete Donaldson.
He does Sol Campbell style tackling. He does run up the field.
What era Sol Campbell? We need to specify.
The endless slide tackle.
So sort of towards the end of his career.
Towards the end of his career, okay. When he joined Newcastle. Yeah. But if you want a player who's going to excel in a shit team, Tino Livramento is very much your man at the moment. He's having a lovely time. And Gareth has been to matches there where he has been observed, so
I think he gets
the ball moving very, very quickly. I know he's only really got one or two positions, but still, I think.
Well, how many positions has Harry Kane got?
Exactly, good point.
Yeah,
part of the problem is that, you know, we've identified so many potential holes in the team here, and Southgate only really.
We're not going to win it, Jim.
Well, he only realistically has this coming up, like this forthcoming international break, to look at new players, right? Because there's one just before the tournament, but obviously that's just tweaking things. So the issue is like, he could pick a really experimental team and give loads of these players a go at once, but you don't learn anything that way because they're not playing in the team they're supposed to fit into.
The tweaking will be this. Mm. The tweaking will start now. And with regards to what you said, you know, friendlies just before the tournament and all that kind of stuff, it's that'll pretty much be the squad, and you're trimming it down by maybe a few players. So, yeah,
the bottom line is the Bundesliga is going to save us.
Yeah.
You know, Jude Eric Bellingham, Harry Kane. Yes. Being brought up good by point. The Bundesliga into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
Jadon Sancho. Goals.
Yeah.
God, blimey, eh? Get I know you'd be up for that, Andy.
I would be up for that. But of course, he scored the winner for Dortmund at the weekend.
Oh.
And they then gave this interview where he said, yeah, I don't think I played very well. He said, I judge myself negatively.
Is that right?
It was really sad.
Maybe he spoke to Ten Hag after the game. Do you see what I did? No, you're rubbish.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Well, Andy, how about this? Reports suggest that both ITV and the BBC want Jurgen Klopp, former Dortmund manager, of course, as a pundit for the Euros this summer. Apparently he's heading there as a fan, though, and isn't interested.
I would love Klopp as a pundit.
I love how no one is listening to the words that Klopp is saying.
I need a break.
It was like, cool. Maybe you're going to take over at a new club, or maybe you stay at Liverpool. You want to be a pundit? I miss my wife. Let me see my wife.
Can you imagine like what the BBC would be willing to pay for Jurgen Klopp? Yeah. Like, it would be an astronomical fee to get him to do anything.
Did you say Jurgen Klopp there? It costs a lot to create a man, but what a pundit.
The thing is, there will be people listening to this going, oh yeah, he's a great personality, it'll be fun. But actually, he was a top-level pundit before he was a top-level coach. If you go back to the 2006 World Cup in Germany, it made him a household name,
really?
his punditing during the World Cup. Right. And that's why when he got the Dortmund job, people were excited. Because normally if a manager goes from Mainz to Dortmund, it was just like, whatever, diminished means.
Yeah.
But it was like, oh, it's that guy off the telly, wow.
Did he give people both barrels? I'd imagine he'd be quite forceful as a pundit and quite...
Frank.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes.
I definitely prefer it to the Jose Mourinho in Portugal style of circular breathing, speaking for 4 minutes without taking a breath.
Yeah, I think he would just be a bit of a misery guts as a pundit.
He's interesting, but bloody hell, I mean, you know, there's only 90 minutes of a football match, isn't there?
There is indeed. And we've got some of them tonight, Andy. Bournemouth take on Luton in the Premier League. Luton Town, this is, of course, to replay the fixture that saw Tom Lockyer suffer a cardiac arrest back in December. Oh. So that fixture will be fulfilled. We've got Champions League, Atletico Madrid versus Inter, and Dortmund, the aforementioned, versus PSV. Two of those four will join Arsenal and those teams in the quarterfinals. There we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble, part of the Acast Creator Network. Patreon subscribers, don't go anywhere. Keep listening for Ramble Uncut. And if you're not a Patreon subscriber, sign up to get Ramble Uncut every single Wednesday. Head over to patreon.com/footballramble. Also, follow us on X, which you can find at twitter.com, TikTok, YouTube, and Instagram at Football Ramble, and follow us on Spotify. Thank you, Andy B.
Thanks.
Thank you, PDD.
Fuck off.
Thank you, Jimmy C.
Cheers.
Yeah, okay, I will.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
The Championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real Championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app.
And hit subscribe.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for ways to win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.